If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We've hit a paywall, so I'm trying to see if I can open this on my phone.
When I was about to start interviewing people for this podcast, I found a picture.
Okay, hold on a second. Oh, there we go. They have done something really effective here.
The Dutch national newspaper, NRC, had arranged photos of 15 of the Carbat kids in a grid.
The headline is Carbat's Children.
The photos are each shot in the same way, with the same lighting.
They've got them dressed all in white.
Laid out like this, it looks like a school yearbook where everyone's related.
They all look familiar, don't they? But here's someone who actually is familiar. Here's Joey, and he's right next to Marsha. They both have exactly the same eyes. They have the same creases around their eyes.
It just looks like a lot of life, doesn't it?
It looks like an enormous amount of life. I mean, it's incredible. Can you imagine being responsible for having created this many people? Did he get a kick out of creating this much life? Was he doing it for practical reasons or, you know, why?
When we left Joey Hoofdman and Marsha Elvers at the end of the last episode, they had just discovered the unthinkable. That Jan Carbat, the renowned Dutch fertility doctor who helped their mothers conceive them, was probably their biological father.
I answered the telephone and there was this really nice social worker. She said, "We found 18 of your half-brothers and sisters. I have to tell you something else because I think we know who the donor is. It's Dr. Carbat himself."
I knew that there was something wrong, so I googled back home in the car the name of the doctor, and I saw a picture of him in his youth. This is something really absurd, but I can't see his face. I see myself in it.
What goes through the mind of the sort of person who's prepared to father dozens of children?
We all want to plant our flags, one way or the other. And I did plant my flag. I planted 200 flags.
Carbat didn't just use his own sperm at the clinic. He did have the sperm of other donors in his bank. One of them has agreed to talk to me.
For the moment, 71 children have been found. They have over 30 grandchildren. So for the moment, I have 100 descendants. Project succeeded? Oh yes.
I'm Jenny Kleeman, and from Something Else, this is The Immaculate Deception. Episode 2, The Super Donor. At the beginning of my research into Jan Carbat's clinic, one of the first stories I read was about Louis, Carbat's super donor. He gave his sperm to the clinic thousands of times, and he must have come into contact with the doctor. But before we hear from Louis, we need to go back to Joey, who was determined to find out exactly what Carbat had done. Joey's mother had gone to Carbat's clinic to be inseminated with her husband's sperm. Joey now had circumstantial evidence that Carbat had used his own sperm instead. He'd learned that his mother had conceived him at the clinic, that the clinic had been closed down for shambolic record-keeping, and that he looked so much like the doctor that when he sent a black and white photo of a young Jan Karbat to friends without any comment.
They say, is that you, Joey?
But he didn't have proof. Joey's next step was to take a DNA test.
I bought 4 DNA tests.
Different kinds?
No, for me, for my brother and my sister and one of the children of my dad's in his prior marriage.
If Joey's DNA didn't match theirs, he could be almost certain that the man who raised him was not his biological father.
So the whole family was saying, Joe, you're crazy. Why you want to do this? You're upsetting your mom. Your dad has passed away. You cannot do this. And then the results from my sister came up, and she was my half-sister and not my full sister. And then the results of my brother came out. And then he was also my half-brother and not my full brother. So we had 3 different fathers.
But there was only so much that family DNA tests and Google could tell him. Joey had spent his life asking questions about his identity, and now he was sure that only one person could give him the answers, the man who ran the fertility clinic, and he still lived in the building where Joey was conceived.
And that was like 500 meters where I had my gym.
Really?
Yeah.
So you had been so close all the time to where...
Yeah. And I Googled also the wife of the doctor, and I thought, I knew her. She went to the gym, my own gym, but she did other exercise, not with me. But I saw her all the time there.
She went to the gym where you worked?
Yeah.
What did it feel like to go and have a look at the clinic, knowing that's where you were?
So I saw his name, and then I saw people moving out and packing boxes in a car. And then the lady came to me, and it was the wife of the doctor.
Rita Karbat.
So I comforted her. Hey, Rita, do you know me? I had the gym here in the village. Yeah, she know the gym, but she did not know me, she said.
You confronted her?
Yeah. I know now that I'm donor conceived, but my father was not my biological father, and that I knew it all along deep inside, but now I know for sure. So I said, could I speak to the doctor? Yeah, sure, another time. It's not suit right now. But if you could come back another time, then we can give you a tour here. No problem.
Joey went away frustrated, but determined to try again as soon as he could. But then, a couple of days later, he got some news.
A couple of days later, we received the news that he was passed away.
At the age of 89, Jan Karbat was dead.
Are you angry that Karbat is dead and not around to face the consequences of what he did?
Yeah. That's also something that's bothering my mind. Because if he always said that he did not do it till the end.
Do you think you'll ever really understand what happened? And why it happened?
Well, there's only one person who can answer that question, and he's not here anymore.
It seems to be working now.
Hello.
It's Hello. Jenny Kleeman and Paul Smith calling from the UK here. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm going to talk to one of the most prolific donors at Jan Karbat's clinic. He donated thousands of times. He knows how it feels to have intentionally fathered an extraordinary number of children.
I know of 70 children,
yeah.
And I've met about 45.
Wow.
And when I called him up, he told me he'd written a statement with his views on what Karbat had done.
Let me tell you what I have written down. Dr. Karbat was a visionary and an idealist. In about 20 years the clinic was operational, he was able to improve the quality of life of many persons, couples and singles, by giving them the opportunity to have children. Because of him, I was able to sire lots of wonderful children who made my life much happier. I think Dr. Karbat should not be blamed for the way he tried to realize his ideal, but praised for the things he has achieved over the years.
It sounds like you think he's a hero.
In my eyes, he is. And I'm fully aware that other people think differently, but it's their opinion.
Coming up after the break.
We've got to see him.
We've got to see him.
I think we should try and see him on Saturday.
I think we should try and see him on Saturday too. I think we should strike while the iron is hot.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Carly. I'm part of the production team behind The Immaculate Deception. We'll go back to the show in just a moment, but first I want to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy. Crooked Media's Hysteria is a weekly podcast hosted by political commentator and comedy writer Aaron Ryan, who's joined by former White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Operations, Alyssa Mastromonaco, plus a bio-coastal squad of funny, opinionated women. They cover everything from reproductive rights to rom-coms, breaking down the political news of the week, plus the topics, trends, and cultural stories that affect women's lives. New episodes of Hysteria drop every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I'm rolling. What's happening now?
Louis has agreed to you come to our hotel and speak to us, which is great because after our incredible conversation on the phone, I have been really keen to meet him in person.
What do you want to find out now?
I just want to know a little bit more about what was involved in that whole procedure of being a donor and also whether or not he got a sense that he was valued, what Carbat's attitude to him was. Because if I want to understand Carbat and why he did what he did, I need to understand how he viewed his donors. We met in a hotel in central Rotterdam. He's in his late 60s, tall, with tanned skin and a puff of white hair.
Test the level. Can you just tell me what you were doing this morning, Louis, so I can...
Well, this morning I wasn't really doing very much. I didn't go to my work, I didn't go to the sauna. I just hang around until it was time to go downtown.
Louis isn't his real name. He uses an alias to protect himself. Ever since his involvement with Carbat's clinic has become public knowledge, he says he's had threats. Because Louis is not just any sperm donor. Louis donated sperm to Carbat's private clinic thousands of times. So we spoke on the phone, and ever since then, I've been really keen to meet you.
Okay, well, I hope I don't disappoint you.
I'm sure you won't.
He began by telling me how, in 1974, when he was in his early 20s and living with his mother, he found a magazine.
The New Review, with an article that explains about artificial insemination.
It was about the science of artificial insemination. It wasn't supposed to inspire people to donate sperm, but it awakened something in Louis.
That's a possibility. That's an opportunity. When I start living on my own, that's what I'm going to do.
Louis grew up in Rotterdam, the only child of divorced parents. He finds it difficult to form relationships. He says he has Asperger's, a form of autism he says makes it hard for him to relate to other people or to feel things the way people expect him to.
I'm autistic. I don't feel what I feel. I only feel when it's very bad. But if you say, how does it make you feel? I can say, I don't feel.
He didn't think he'd ever be able to create a family of his own. At least, not in the traditional way.
I assumed when I am dead, and there won't be anybody to remember me or to say something nice at my funeral or empty my apartment, I have no heirs. Who will remember me when I'm gone?
But if he could become a father by donating sperm...
It was an opportunity to create the family I didn't have.
When Louis moved out of his mother's place 9 years later, he remembered the article. He rang up an information line run by the Dutch Society for Sexual Reform and asked,
"Do you have any sperm banks for me?"
They told him about three. One in central Rotterdam, one 20 miles away, in Leiden, and one in the suburb of Barendrecht, run by Dr. Jan Carbat. Louis began donating to Carbat's clinic in 1983. Sometimes he donated there three times a week. He had a routine.
Washing, getting dressed, producing sperm, breakfast. He told me, keep it warm. It must be warm until it's frozen in. Don't put the cup on the cold table. It may harm the sperm. I usually left home at 7:30, going out, take my bicycle. I went to the south, and then I came to a railway line. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, let's be fast. There's a train coming. Went through the meadows and the fields, growing sprouts, cabbages, meadows with horses. And after some time, I came to a dike. Then I went to the voordijk, where Carbat's place was. I was there about 7:55.
When he arrived at the clinic, Louis would head to the back of the house, a separate entrance from the one used by Carbat's patients, so that donor's anonymity was protected. He had barely any contact with Dr. Carbat at all, he told me, except from the occasional hello when he cycled in. He'd take his specimen to a hatch,
open a window and place it in a cup to keep it warm. And for some time we phoned with one of the assistants and they came to collect it. I did not have time to talk much, so I gave him my sperm. And I took my bike and was at 8:30 at my work here in the center of Rotterdam. It was a routine.
Louis told me he went through this routine sometimes two or three times a week for 12 years. But in 1995, he finally got a girlfriend and decided his days as a sperm donor had to end. When he told Carbat's clinic,
they gave me flowers and they gave me a coupon and they said thank you very much and they gave me a little farewell.
But the relationship didn't last. And then, a few years later, Louis received a letter from Carbat.
Can you come once more? There is a lady who wants another child. So I went and I said to the doctor, shall I start donating? And his answer was, please.
He started donating again, about once a week, from 1998 to 2002.
Did you know that limits existed on the number of times you should be donating?
I have heard stories, but I thought, okay, I want to give. But nobody ever said, thank you, we have had enough.
Well, they called you back for more.
Yes.
Carbat called you back for
Absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
Louis had been donating in the hope there would be someone to mourn him at his funeral. He didn't want to be an anonymous donor, but he had no choice in those days.
I hoped that someday I would find one of my children, one or two, and I would get a relation with them and I could make them my heirs. And the more children, the bigger the chance that I meet somebody.
It was a numbers game. Do it as much as possible to increase
yes,
your chances.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you didn't think that by doing this, you were creating separate human beings and people?
I thought about it, but it wasn't really important. After a couple of years, it was a habit. It was the pattern, go to the sperm banks, deliver your sperm. That's it. And things like you're creating human beings, no, I really didn't think about that.
As DNA tests have become so much more accessible, and databases allow biological families to connect with each other like never before, Louis has been able to find dozens of his children.
For the moment, 71 children have been found. They have over 30 grandchildren. So for the moment, I have 100 descendants. Project succeeded? Oh, yes.
It's extraordinary to hear you talking in this way, because it's a project for you, but that's all these people exist because of your
yes,
project.
Absolutely.
Do you have no regrets at all?
I have met my children and they're great, each and every one. They look nice. They are very friendly people and they're smart too.
And none of them angry with you for having donated so many times?
Maybe, but I haven't met them. Well, you must see it as some kind of solar system. I am the sun, and in close orbit there are circling a number of children. Others are circling in wide orbits and go more their own way. They are hardly ever interact. Some of them pass through the solar system and go out and never come back. And some of them stay out of the system and they go their own way. For me, the way Karbat worked was very favorable. And I am very grateful to the man. I know he did something wrong, but I think he did the right things in the wrong way. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't steal anybody. He didn't abuse his patients. He was only too keen to help them. And he obeyed the basic rule of the show business, which is never disappoint your audience. And he thought, I don't want to disappoint my patients. One way or the other, they want children, they will get children.
I asked Louis if he thought there was anything Karbat should have done differently.
He should have had a good administration and he shouldn't have used his own sperm.
He shouldn't have used his own sperm?
Absolutely. No, it was forbidden. It was against the rules.
Yeah, this wasn't a mistake. He chose to do that. He chose
yes,
to use his own sperm.
Yes.
Why do you think he did it?
I don't know. I'm not going to answer that because I don't know. And unfortunately, we can't ask him anymore.
After Louis stopped donating, he didn't see Karbat for about a decade, until one day.
I've been to the sauna in Barendrecht, and when I rode home, I crossed the street he lives in. So I drove to his house. Let's see if there's somebody there. There was. He was in the driveway. I waved, and we started talking, and I said, we do want tea? Yes, of course. I met his wife and his youngest daughter. And we had a couple of very nice hours.
And how were they to you? Did you get the sense that that Karbat valued you?
Yes, absolutely.
What did he say to make you think that?
Well, I don't. He always said he valued my brown eyes because there was always a lack of brown-eyed donors. And that's the only thing I remember.
Did he make you feel important?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That visit was the longest time I ever talked to him. Because usually, if I talked to anybody, it was one of the assistants. Early in the morning, I never had time.
But that time you went to Baydorp and you saw Karbat and
yeah,
he invited you in,
yeah,
you felt that there was warmth there, that he was treating you like he valued you, like
absolutely,
he respected
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, yes. It was a very nice visit. He invited me to have dinner, but I said, no, sorry, it's time to go home and I have already taken my dinner out of the freezer.
Talking to Louis made me realise just how far Karbat was prepared to bend the rules to get the results he thought he needed. But it doesn't explain why he so often used his own sperm to do it. Karbat already had legal children of his own when he was inseminating his patients with his own sperm. He already had heirs. He didn't have the same justifications for fathering so many children as Louis did. Was he some kind of narcissist who thought his excellent genes needed to be present in as many human beings as possible? Was he a fraudster who discovered he could get rich quick by using sperm he never had to pay a donor for? Was Louis right about Corbat? Did he just want his patients to leave the clinic pregnant, and this was the quickest shortcut? Or, and this almost doesn't bear thinking about, did he get some kind of kick out of it? Next time on The Immaculate Deception, the Corbat kids will never be able to get the answers they want from Corbat himself. And neither can I. But we have found someone who managed to confront Corbat right at the very end of the doctor's life.
Ik kon wel werk krijgen. Ik wou graag een röntgenoloog worden.
If he was confronted with those children that are his, that have his distinctive features,
oh, yeah.
How would he explain that?
Oh my God, heart attack, I think.
The Immaculate Deception is a Something Else production. Paul Smith is the producer, with additional production from Arlie Adlington. Mixing and sound design comes from Will Short at Spoke Media. The editor and executive producer is Peggy Sutton. Thank you to Magda Saron, Dan Cocker, Mark Rivers, and Steve Ackerman. If you identify with any of the issues we're reporting on and have a story you'd like to share with us, our email address is deception@somethingelse.com.